Get going a full 30 seconds ahead of schedule. I'm going to start that. So, hello everyone. If you're following the shopping track, this is the third talk of the day. And so, welcome to the shopping app case studies. First of all, I want to remind you all that today we had three talks earlier, guidance for shopping apps, shopping app case studies, which is actually this one, that's my bad, and key technologies for shopping apps that we just went through an hour ago. So welcome to the case studies talk. This one is actually a little bit special because what we want to do today is really have an open conversation about a couple of the shopping apps that are already in the store and do a show and tell. First of all, to see how those partners, those app builders, tackled some of the really challenging problems in the shopping space. We're going to be joined by Montauk from Newegg, who actually graciously accepted to come here and talk to us. He's sitting right there. He's going to join us on the stage in a moment. And we're just going to go through a couple of those apps, have a discussion going on. The idea is not to go over and find all the little places that we might have missed in certification and just point out those little things. But you know, instead, what we want to do is really talk about the problems and how we solved some of those in the apps that we already have in the store. So it's an open forum. Feel free to ask questions. And what we will do is afterwards, if you can't answer them on stage, we'll take them offline. Although it will be incredibly hard to keep you guys here past 6:45, I'm pretty sure about that. So we'll start by talking about what we have on stage today and what we're going to do. Number one, we have Montauk from Newegg, who is the director of their technology strategy. And Newegg is one of the first apps that we had in the store. I think they have been with us since release preview. Is that correct? So we had Newegg as one of the really early partners. And what's so cool about Newegg is not only that they're proudly geeky, and you'll see that in the app, but also they were one of those early apps that came into the store with a full login, cart, checkout experience really early on. Those tend to be the hard problems to solve in shopping apps, so it was really, really powerful to see that. I myself have bought tremendous amount of stuff from Newegg over the years, and it's really actually fascinating to be able to buy something from a Windows 8 app, so it's awesome to have him here. The second thing that you see on the screen is Rich Kilmer, and he is from Living Social, an app that came in right before we launched last week. Unfortunately, as you guys are probably all aware of, the Hurricane Sandy that hit the East Coast, he's actually stuck in Washington, so he couldn't make it. So I'll do my best Rich impression, and I'll be going over the Living Social app and try to answer questions probably in less detail than he could have, but we'll do our best. With that, I would like to introduce Montauk to come onto the stage. And what we're going to start with is a demo of the app. I'll let him introduce himself a little bit, and let's just go through a demo of Newegg application. So, do you want to give a hand to Montauk? Okay. Let me switch this. So, you got the microphone and everything.
Can you hear me? Okay, my name is Montauk. I'm with Newegg for about 8 years. Been with involved with different projects. Because we use a lot of the Microsoft Stack technology from the server side, the middleware database. For us, it took us only, say, two months. We just get the idea to build a Windows 8 application, then polish it, make it happen to the application store. Let me just give you guys a quick tour about our application. So when you launch the application, you can see we have the category hub. You can see we have the Shell Shocker, also Daily Deals. You know, some users say they prefer just browse all the products by category. Say they may take a lot of time to do some research. We can say select the computer hardware. You'll see we have the subcategory. You click a subcategory, we have the semantic zoom. You can zoom in back to the high-level category. Let me just pick one item. Say we pick up one. you know, in this page, we have the app bar, say, because typically when you see when you are in one category, you can find a lot of results. So we can use filtering, say, I want to filter, say, by the CPU type, whatever CPU. Then we can just drill down to those products. When you select the products, in this page, because this is the main page for most users, they want just stick on the page, say, see like the specs of the item. We can see all the details, the full feature detail. Also, you can see the reviews, because reviews are most helpful for you. Shopping decision, say, we can just slap in, get more the reviews. When we check all the analytics, some users, they spend a lot of time, they just read the reviews one by one, because they want to make a careful decision to buy a, say, high-value item. Also, we have the like the shopping insight, which give user another level of like the decision assistant. Say most other geeks, they just select some item. In this item, we can just say add to cart. You can see we have a flashing item tell you, say, this item has been added to the cart. Also, we can just add it to the wish list. So this is one way of, say, for the typical user, they drill down the items by selecting different category. Also, some users, they just prefer to run a search. Say, let me just search something like the Windows tablet. You know, for this search, we got 250 items, say. In this video also, we can use the same, the user experience, say. They can just filter in the results. Say, I can run the sort, say, by the best rating. Okay, then we just add it to the cart. So when the user finishes the shopping, add items to the cart, we want to give the user, say, something like the one click, say, for them to quick check out all those items. Say, in this page, we can check, say, here's all my cart. You can input the promotion code here, or sometimes, say, you'll see this one, I just clicked, say, back, and I got two items there, we can just add it. Let me just switch back. You'll see we can, say, remove this one item. Okay, two items, then we're good to go. Check out. We just log in. So typically, most users, they just have one of the favorite, the shipping address, billing address. All you need is just enter the CVV code for the credit card, click submit, you're good to go. That's it. That's for the browsing, searching, and the shopping. So for some users, they are interested, say, they are very careful about their product delivery, say. In the My Account, you can track all the shipping information. Also, you can change all the different shipping address. Even so, we can just pin this page to the home screen. Say, when the order status gets changed, you will get a live tail update. That's basically for the application. You know, a lot of users, they have the wish list. For the framework, basically, we reuse a lot of the components, say. You just define a given data context, the presentation tier there, they will just pick up the items. Say, for this one, say, I have some item, I want to remove it, you can just select it, say, you can just delete it. That's just one, say. Typically, user only focus on the content, say, when they want to make some change, they will get to be educated to see there's one application bar, they can just change something. That's a basic overview of application. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
I see.
So before we move on, thank you for that, Montag. That was really good overview. I would also like to go quickly over Living Social, another app that we talked about today. Before I go deep in there, one of the things that this is Mark's machine from an earlier earlier talk, so you're familiar with it. But one of the things that's really core to the shopping experience on Windows is the Live Tiles. So just a couple notes that Newegg chose to bring their Shell Shockers, which I believe are a daily deal sort of thing that they had for years, which are also their best deals on the site, right? And what Digital Folio does is shows you the items that you're watching for the prices. What the Living Social app does is it actually goes through deals that are local or that are available for you, so you can go deep and learn what's or buy those deals. So that's what we're gonna do. This is Living Social's main hub page. So a couple of main things to notice. Number one is it's all about deals. So again, like Newegg, there's no Chrome to distract you from what you're trying to buy. A couple of things that are unique to Living Social are, number one, Living Social's deal, the way that Living Social deals work is, number one, you buy them, and then they become a voucher 24 hours later. So you can see that I have a voucher in there that is Starbucks that I need to use by March 2013. And the cool thing that they've done here is they've chosen to put that at the highest level of the app. So as I look at new deals, I'm also reminded of those vouchers that I need to use or I will lose them. Let's first start with talking about the deals. One of the things that's unique to Living Social or unique to the way they've chosen to build the Windows 8 application is because Windows has a built-in way of determining where your location is, they're taking advantage of that and showing you deals that are close to you. So now in the middle of Redmond, we don't happen to have a lot of deals. So what they have done is to backfill for those customers that don't have a lot of deals around them at the moment, they actually show you a bunch of these nationwide deals as well. But let's just dial in to see what's around us. So one of the things that Living Social has is a large catalog of deals, but not all of them are the same. So number one thing that you will notice on the screen as we look at it is the different sizes of certain deals. So they have an algorithm that decides based on both my personal kind of deals that I like and another set of algorithms, they actually choose to display different deals at different sizes. So in this case, you can see that the Spicily deal is the largest picture in there, and that gets most attention. And I don't know what it means about me, but a food item is really big, but the fitness one is really small and to the side of the screen. So I feel really hurt by that. But one of the interesting things is as I go and look at these deals, I can go into, let's just satisfy Living Social's hint and go into the Spicily set. One of the things that they have chosen to do in the Windows 8 app, uniquely in the app, is this idea of personalization. So there's multiple ways of figuring out how to personalize an app, right? A lot of the shopping sites in the world try to do last visited. I believe it's a part of Newegg as well, where you would see things that you've already seen before. Another way that Amazon does is recommended, because you bought this, people who bought that bought these. Another way to do recommendations or personalization is just to ask the user, do you like this kind of deal? So if you look at one of the buttons on there is my kind of deal. So when I say that spices or organic spice gift set is my kind of deal, Living Social app will actually keep on building that information and show me different sets of data. So if I'm not mistaken, because of that, what I'm looking at has changed, and now I have another set of things that are showing up in my deals. So like Wine Enthusiast got bigger, and Elemental Cuisine is also showing up there. And I just see more food deals. No fitness apps for me, come on. So that's one really cool thing about Living Social. Number two is, As we were talking, I'm not going to buy candles, but let's do something that I like. Not fitness, we got that covered, but the Brazilian steakhouse. Oh, that looks good. All right. So, the I am hungry. It's 5:45. What is it? 6 p.m. So one of the other cool things about living social is, as we know in the shopping space, we want to reduce friction as much as possible from the user to buy stuff. There's a lot of ways to reduce friction. One of the things that I love about Windows is how flat the how flat it is for the design, so you can get to the thing that you want to buy in as few clicks as possible. So in Living Social's case, if you look at the hub, its deals are literally one click away. So actually, let's switch to let's switch back to Spicely. And in one click, I'm already in the deal that I can buy. Now, I'm already logged into Living Social with my account, and Living Social already has my credit card, because anytime you buy a deal from Living Social, the first thing they ask is your credit card, like a lot of shopping apps do. And then they cash it on the machine. Encrypted, of course, it's secure and everything. And the cool thing is, now I'm just going to hit buy now. When I hit buy now, I'm already in the checkout flow. I can see what deal that I'm purchasing. I can see the options, and it's already picked for me because there's only one option. I can select the number of items that I want to buy, and then I can actually see that the payment method is already cached. So the purchase is only one click away. That is a really powerful way of flattening your checkout design so that instead of going through a next option, you can actually have it all on one screen, so all the user has to do it is purchase. So that is something that I would encourage everyone who's moving from the web or other platforms where a next behavior is the standard to think about how you can flatten your design to make it a one-click experience. If you go into the store today and look at some of our travel apps as well, look at cheapoair.com, look at Skyscanner, look at booking.com, you will see those. You will see that all of those apps have actually taken that really complex travel booking scenarios and flattened that design so that you literally have to pick your hotel, pick the number of nights you're staying, pick the number of people, enter your credit card information, and check out in the same screen. Just a really powerful way of flattening the design and making it easier to buy, which is at the end of the day what our goal is as shopping apps. Another cool thing that Living Social has done, and this is sort of unique to their, just like Shell Shocker and reviews are unique to Newegg, one of the things that are unique to Living Social app is places. So they've invented this concept of places in their app just for the Windows app. And what you can do is two things. Number one, it can detect a bunch of places around you and set it up for you already. So, you know, it figured out Portland and Bellevue and everything. But you can also create custom places. So what I've done is, I say I don't have a brother, so I'm totally lying to you. But I have said that my brother's home is in New York City, New York. And what the app lets me then do is crash. So that happens.
Wouldn't be a presentation without a crash.
Oh, of course. We're going to show you the blue screen of death really soon as well. that won't happen. But now that I jinxed myself, though. One of the cool things is when you go into the places, and I'm not going to risk going to my brother's place again. It was because I lied to you guys. You can actually see all the deals that is associated with that location. So you can see that these are all the places that I have told Living Social that I care about. So I can actually switch between those and see. And let's be really courageous and let's try brother's home once again. Oh, there we go. So you can see that now I can see deals that are around my brother's house. So that's a really interesting way of thinking about it, because today a lot of daily deals sites show you stuff that's just around you. But if you think about those people who either travel a lot, so a lot of you guys came to Redmond, you don't live in Redmond, right? You came from other places in the world to Redmond. So what you could have done in the Living Social app right before you came is just add Redmond as an interesting place. And then Living Social app will show you those deals around Redmond. And once you don't need the place anymore, you can remove that. But if you think about all those places that are permanently interesting, Think about your parents' house. Think about your kids' college town. Think about your aunts and nieces. Think about the people that matter. Or think about if you're commuting to work. I live in Redmond and work in Redmond, so it doesn't really apply to me. Yes, I'm one of the cool kids. But if you're living in a place and working in another place, it might make sense to pin both of those places in the Living Social app so you can get those deals that matter to both. The best example is if you have a work and a home, you can get a bunch of food, lunch deals for your work, and a bunch of other stuff for your home. So that's a really powerful way. And the cool thing is, using the app bar, you can actually add a place, give it a name. Let's call it Sisters. I don't have a sister either. A sister's home, and say that she lives in Phoenix, and if you can type, Arizona. And then you can add a place, and now you will see that we have added not only brother's home, but sister's home. So that's, again, a unique way of thinking about how you want to show information to your users. And to close, one of the things that I was trying earlier is this whole idea of printing. I told you in a previous session that I love printing. I can't demo it right now just because of the way the internet is set up here. It's a public internet, and we don't happen to have public printers that I can print to. But one of the things that they have chosen to do is have a really cool print experience, because you'll see that a lot of Living Social's merchants want to have a printed voucher so you can take it and they can charge it to you, your voucher. So they have built a whole print experience where you would just select devices, and if I had a printer here, I could print it to them. And the cool thing is, even though you see a really attractive person with a Starbucks cup, what you print actually is the voucher with the QR code. So what you see is kind of different than what you actually get out of the printer, which I think is a really cool way of thinking about what you need for your own app as well. So with those, I'm gonna do that. I would love to open up to Mark that will have a script, that not a script, but a set of questions, I would say.
There we go.
Let me get you the screen set up. We just want to have a question and answer. And what I would love to do is, as you guys have your questions for Montauk, me, or Mark, just ask those, and we'll just have a question and answer session.
Yeah. So as John pointed out earlier, we left an empty seat there for Rich. Just like hope he's doing all right. Yeah, we got a question already. Go ahead.
Could you give more detail about how Living Social encrypted the card number? For example, could we use the password vote feature in Windows 8 to store the credit card number?
Could we ask Montauk on how you guys keep the credit card numbers?
So, yeah, the question was he wanted more data on how we're encrypting data, basically, right? Or how Living Social encrypted data. So you want to?
Yeah, so. Let me sure it's open. So for Newegg, we say store securely all the password on the server side, the credit card number. That means basically for most user, when they check out, they just pick one of the existing credit card. Then for our application, when you submit the order, we basically just say, okay, pick up the number, say the card 1234. Then all the transaction happens on our server side. That's our experience. If you expose the credit card to a lot of external client, you get more risk. That's our experience.
Yeah.
If we turn this
off. Oh, okay.
Okay, so what this slide is showing is basically some of the things that we went through in the earlier sessions. And so we thought we could use these as the sort of talking points to discuss here. So the first one there was realizing the opportunity. And that was really about creating, you know, most shopping companies have a website already, and that's how their customers interact with them, is through a website. So what is the opportunity to create a Windows 8 app? Why would you do that versus just using your website? So Montauk, what was the motivation for you guys? You have a great website already.
Right,
what was
right.
your motivation to create a Windows 8 app?
I guess there are several drivers for us to create one of the Windows application. Because we have one the Windows Phone 7 application, we got a very positive feedback. Say, our user, our customer, they just still prefer. Say, we have one the natural experienced application. They can just run the browsing, searching, then check out. For the because we have the services ready. That means the Windows 8 just provide another like the high level user experience. We just pick up that user experience, hook up with our data, then. Reuse the existing framework. Just let me say we just take a a small efforts create a new whole new user experience for our customers. Yeah, that's our the kind of
great. Great, thanks. Yeah, and I know in talking to Rich in the past, he's told me about how he went to convince his management that they should do a Windows 8 app. You know, they have some apps on other platforms, and I guess some of his management was kind of in a wait and see position on Windows 8, and he went to them and pointed out that, you know, the installed base of Windows is enormous, yeah, which you've probably heard a lot today, and so if even some fraction of those people upgrade to Windows 8, that's a huge audience, bigger than they have on the other platforms, just, you know, right from the start.
Right, and to add on to that, on the opportunity side, there's three things to really think about. Right, number one is the size of the audience. Walmart was talking about 4 million upgrades already happened since launch. The numbers of 400 million users on Windows 8 have been is sort of what's being discussed. So if you think about the audience, it doesn't take much. Like, the percentage point on that would be an amazing number of people. Number two is, as Montauk was talking about, if you have a web page that is relying mostly on web services, and those web services are in pretty decent shape, there is an opportunity for you to really take advantage of the Windows UX. You know, think about the snap view, think about the contracts, think about the fact that you can search Newegg from any app that you're in, and those live tiles that would entice your users to come back to your application. That's a great opportunity. And on the Living Social one, Barron's, the magazine, had a blog about Living Social. Because Rich cannot be here, I would actually ask, if you have time today, go look for an article from Barron's on Living Social and how they thought about sort of the Windows 8 journey. And I thought that was a really interesting article that, you know, I wasn't even a part of it, but I read it, and it was a really interesting way of seeing how they came onto the platform.
Yeah. Another similarity I wanted to point out between you guys and Living Social, they took about the same amount of time to develop their app, just 2 months, right? Which is, somewhere in that time frame, from the time that we sat down to talk about it until the time they were in the store. It was an amazing turnaround. I think that kind of speaks to the richness of the platform and how easy it is to use.
Yes.
SDK.
Also, another point to say, for all the application, for the web application, say, browser is one limited client. The Windows 8 is a way more much, much powerful client for the end user, like the caching, those performance, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why, say, right, we just prefer, say, create the native application for the real user experience. Yeah,
deeper experience. Yeah.
Actually, what technologies did you use to build your app?
We just used the C#, the Mac Store stack. You know, I just get the MSDN magazine. There's one article about the MVVM. Mm-hmm. Yeah, typically, yeah, we use them model too. It's very, say, intuitive to get it, pick it up. Yeah.
Cool. Great. Yeah, I know, and a lot of people are now able to leverage their experience creating websites, you know, by using just HTML and JavaScript that we have
right
in there.
So
I know that's helping a lot of apps get up to speed very fast. A lot of people get their apps up to speed very fast. Yeah.
Do you know what Living Social used?
They used HTML and JavaScript. They leveraged their experience on the web for that. And yeah, it was very fast. Their designer was very familiar with that sort of stuff. Made it very quick.
So if we have in the room or on the web watching, I'll get to the question. If you have folks that are familiar with C# XAML because of their Windows experience previously, bring that forward. You can do really powerful stuff with it. And that's what the Newegg model was. But if you're a web developer, you've had your first start in your business on the web, bring that experience. Bring HTML5 JavaScript to native app development. And one of the best things there is you can actually use your existing skill set to quickly prototype and build in the language that you are familiar with to get to market. That's a super powerful thing. We had a question in the back.
Wallet, either in Windows 8 or Windows 8, not something similar to the passbook that we have seen in iOS, which has, at least to my knowledge, a good acceptance from the audience, both of the vendors and the retailers, as well as the software developers, because it gives us the chance to create the fly coupons and to the consumer to get those coupons and have them outside in a pretty well fashion. So I think these two things will put more reasons to move from HTML and web sites to, let's say, m-commerce or m-catalog sites.
Sure. So let me recap that for the room. A couple of questions in there. Number one was, do we expect to have a wallet feature in Windows or Windows Phone? On the Windows Phone side, I'm going to sort of leave that for the Windows Phone track. On Windows, we don't have a built-in wallet, but instead what we have is each app can choose to capture that information, like Newegg chose to do it on the server, and Living Social, I believe, chooses to do it on the client in a decrypted, encrypted world. I'm not 100% sure, but it belongs to the app builder. That decision belongs to the app builder. There's no central way or no central station that we hold a wallet. But for those app developers who are selling digital goods, there is an opportunity to use the seeded wallet in the Microsoft account, sort of use the Microsoft Commerce Engine to do your transactions. What's really powerful, though, in Windows, and I love this, especially for those who sell digital goods, is the ability to use either your own Commerce Engine that you're using today, Microsoft Accounts Commerce Engine, or third-party Commerce Engines like PayPal. So as you think about this really personalized way of checking out, what Windows allows you to have that flexibility as an app builder to connect to any one of those and let the user choose what they want to do. So on the feedback of side of wallet would be useful, note it, and that's one of the things that we would think about. But right now, we love the way that we offer that flexibility to both app builders and also to the consumer. On the second question of passbook, do we have it? No. That passbook is an interesting way of thinking about coupons. But the way that I'd like to think about coupons is, and this is John's sort of way of thinking about coupons. I love coupons. And I love coupons because they get me deals, right? But I don't like random coupons that are sent to me. And I might be alone in this, and I don't think I am, but when I get a Valpak and there's a bunch of coupons that I'm not going to use, they don't add much value. So what's much more powerful is for those app developers who have coupons, so think of the big retailers, think of the grocery shoppers, think of Living Socials and the other dealers and Newegg of the world, it's actually way more powerful for the apps that I chose to put on my machine to give me coupons, either through Live Tiles or through email, which is the regular channel that they use today. But those apps giving me coupons that I care about is much more powerful. So that's why I like the whole idea of having Live Tiles that shows you daily deals and other things like that.
Well, the situation is quite different, actually, because what you're looking about is the case where you would want a suggestion, an offer mm-hmm. to someone so to buy. But as far as I know, in iOS Passbook, you basically have a centralized place of all your purchases made, be it plane tickets or hotel tickets, hotel accommodations, and so on. So I think the previous question was about having a centralized place for all the purposes.
All right, thank you for the clarification. Let me do it for the room. The whole idea is that with other platforms, there's a way to capture all of those things that you've bought so you can get back to them and have a collection of that. We don't have that feature in Windows 8, so thanks for the heads up, and that's something that we would take back to the product team.
I suppose it would be something nice to have a charm, something like that.
Interesting.
To be everything centralized and maybe share between applications, stuff you've bought. And mm-hmm.
Great. There's actually an opportunity for someone to build that app. Actually, I don't see anyone leaving to go write that app, but there's one right there. But yeah, that's one of the things that ShareCharm allows. If you build that app that is your, so that's why we were talking about earlier in the session about this app called Pepperplate. That is a way to collect all these recipes from all around the web by just simply share to Pepperplate, which I should just give the demo already, but I haven't. The cool thing, what you're talking about is there's an opportunity to do that with the ShareCharm, definitely. It's not built into the system, but there's a third-party opportunity to totally do that.
Which takes us right to our next point up there, which was sharing, right?
Yeah, we've done that.
So why don't we, how much did you pay this guy?
None. He just loves me that much.
Okay, so sharing. We talked a lot about this earlier and about the advantages of doing that, being able to select an item. You know, one of the examples I gave in my earlier talk was a camera I found on Newegg, right. And I said, I want to share this with my wife. This is the camera that I've been telling you about I want for my birthday. It's real easy for me to, you know, pull out the share charm.
You're
put
really
that in
demanding
email.
About the stuff that you want on your birthday, though.
I am.
Well,
well, the interesting thing is my wife's birthday is the same day as mine, so we... Well, I end up sharing things.
That is weird, just so you know. That
it is weird. I couldn't believe it. So anyway, that's one example of sharing. So how did you guys think about sharing when you implemented the app?
Well, I think, say, from the technical perspective, maybe just say several lines of code, say, make sure, say, the user, they can just share their either wish list, their item to their friends using their favorite application. Also, there's another thing, say, every link is a kind of the opportunity to sell the product, right? We just want the user, they just share the item by themselves to their friends. That means for us, say, we can see more potential, say, the purchasing session come up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can you actually show the sharing experience? Because you do one of the things, like if you could show a quick demo maybe.
Yes.
The reason why I would ask that is, you guys do something interesting that we covered in an earlier session. Mm-hmm. In the app itself, you have pictures and you have the details and you have the reviews. But when I share, you actually choose to share a URL. So could you talk about how you did that, why you did that?
Let me just pick up this item.
Oh, sorry, I didn't change that. Yeah, we did.
Yeah, basically, say we just... make sure, say, the user, they have one the sharing item with one the basic description, also with the link. When the user open the link in different contexts, they could be open the links from the mobile application, so it will pick up their browser to see the item, right? That's our basically the sharing experience. Basically, say, if those items are very kind of the helpful for the user to spread out, to help them make the decision, we just make sure those items are shareable.
Right. Okay. And could you also show us, you just mentioned something about the sharing a wish list?
I guess wish list is on the dev, not already yet.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's in our dev queue.
Got it. Cool.
You heard it here first.
Stay off announcements. I will go fix that if you want to go. Thank you.
So, Living Social has a really interesting sharing opportunity, too, that they do. You know, one of their primary scenarios is if you share something, you can share it, for instance, to your Facebook page or something, and you get a unique link that's tied to you when you've bought something. You know, after you've bought it, you can share it out there. If three of your friends then go and purchase that, then your voucher is free. So that's a really, you know, interesting way to think about sharing and getting people to spread the word in a viral way about your app and your products and so on. So
what they've chosen to do is after you buy so you can share a deal by itself, you know, without even buying, and it will be a sanitized URL that anyone can see. But if you actually buy the deal and you're at the, you know, final, I purchased it, it says congratulations, you purchased something, go eat your food, it also says share us. So when you actually use a share charm and share the link out, it now is your unique link that if three people were to buy it, you would actually get it for free. So as you think about like the Newegg example of making sure that the URL is there, the Living Social example of having a unique link based on what you're doing so you can track it, those are the kind of stuff that everyone should think about as you're building your shopping apps.
Okay. Yeah, question.
I have a question regarding sharing. So I would like to know, does the share functionality work in both ways? I mean, you can share from your app with the mail app as an example, but what if you would see a CNET app, for example, and see a review for a desktop screen or something like that? Can you share from the CNET app to the Newegg app and get a product detail
Great, great, great question. The answer is it depends. The answer, and what it depends on is share is a two-way contract. So there's we've talked about how these charms are basically contracts that you can specify whether you're a share or a share target or a share source. Just had to look at
or
him
both.
To make sure. Or both, yes, or both. And what it allows you to do is if you're a share source, you say, here's the format of data that I'm going to share. And in Nuix's case, it's a little bit of text with a URL.
Yeah.
In any app, you can make that a picture, you can make that text, you can make it any other format you want. When that happens, when you bring in the share charm as a user, the share contract basically asks the source what type of data that is sharing, and then shows the user a set of apps that are a target for that type of data. So if the CNET app understood, say, a URL and had the smarts to go in, parse that URL, figure out which product it was, and then show your review, they can totally do that. This Pepperplate app that I keep talking about, and I'm not going to show you because I want to keep the suspense. You guys go download it. What the Pepperplate app does is, on Internet Explorer shares a URL. What they do is they listed themselves as a shared target that understands URLs. And when you invoke the shared charm, they actually go send that. They fetch the URL, send it to their cloud service, parse it, and tell you that they've added it to their app. So when you click switch to the app, you can actually see the recipe in the Pepperplate app. So if CNET or any other person wanted to do that, great. Moreover, if you're a shopping app or a shopping site that can do wish lists, it's a really powerful way to think about share target, because then what you can have is people shopping on a third-party site and then start sharing stuff to you because you're their wish list curator. So if you think about those experiences, again, I don't see anyone rushing out to build that app, but go do that. Actually, I see one person who's leaving. So either we bore them to death, or he's going to build that app before you guys do.
So going back to what we talked about with iOS wallet and some of the things you're talking about with sharing, it sounds like what might be the key here is a richer sharing contract, something that Microsoft could standardize and provide not just a URL or an image, but rather, this is a product. This is a shopping contract. This is an advertisement. This is a boarding pass. Something that gives apps maybe a nudge into how they want to share data back and forth. And if you could provide some standardized template contracts, it would really encourage people to be sharing things in a richer way.
And
maybe in JSON something, some standardized format.
I'll just repeat the question. If that's just so everyone has heard it. So the suggestion, I think, less of a question, but a good suggestion, was is there a way that Microsoft could standardize a few of these types of sharing items, not just a text or a URL, but also something like a boarding, like give some semantic type, like a product or a boarding pass? I'll defer to you for the answer a little bit.
So there are a number of different formats that you can share beyond just text, images, and URLs. There's quite a few more. And I don't see any reason why that wouldn't keep expanding, but that's a really great suggestion, that those specific types to be able to share out.
We get a plus one from there.
So. Yeah, cool. All right, let's move on to search and filtering. We have about 17 minutes left, and we've gotten through two bullet points.
That's 10, plenty. We're going to rush through the
rest. It's a great conversation. I'm really enjoying it. So search and filtering. Earlier we talked about this and how it's important to be performant, you know, with your search results as they come back. Maybe what you want to do is get the first screen full of results and immediately populate that so the user can start browsing and interacting with that, and then delay loading the rest. That's one of the things. And then filtering is really important, as Montauk showed in his demo, how powerful that was to be able to filter down when he said, you know, he searched on a certain type of CPU, yeah, and then was able to filter it down even further. So,
I guess also for the searching, when they've written a lot of results, there are a lot of the example on the MSDN. You just pick up the control, say hook up those interface, maybe run say page by page or say another kind of this approach. There are a lot of existing examples there. Yeah.
So when you built your search, I'm curious. Do you do the searches online and download the results, or do you filter locally?
Online, we just send the query and the context to the server service. it's a cluster service. We run the parallel on the server side, then return just the first page of the data back to the client. They'll make sure, say, the first time to the first byte will be very fast. Also, the transport, no a lot of cost.
Got it.
Yeah, also, in terms of the user experience, we use a synchronized the service call. Yeah.
Cool. One note, because I know I will get a text from Rich on this if I didn't say it.
Yeah.
What Living Social has, so Newegg has, do you have an idea of how many products do you have on Newegg? Just a ballpark estimate.
It's on, say 100 million level.
100 million SKUs, basically, that you have searching through
yeah.
When you do a search. So that's a lot. When you think about Living Social or any other type of, if you think about these newer business models around Fab and around those really curated small set of data, what Living Social has decided to do is basically download all of the data locally to the machine and then do the filtering and search local to the machine. The advantages of that is you can have a snappy filtering, fast filtering, and you know, as people say, I like this deal and this deal, you can lay it out differently, and it's really nice. But as you get into the millions or hundreds of millions, as Newegg and some other of our partners might be dealing with, we have to really look at whether server side or client side is the right thing to do.
Yeah. Okay. Next, live tiles and toast notifications. Okay, so as we were talking about this earlier, this turns out to be a really powerful way to highlight your app and to draw users into your app. You know, they've already downloaded and decided to install your app, so they're telling you that you've got a relationship with them already. This is a super powerful way to interact with them through live tiles. To have those things updating, showing people the deal of the day or the shell shock or whatever that sort of thing is, really just begging them to come into your app and
in a good
get this
way.
Deal.
In a good way.
In a good way, yeah. Yeah, I meant that to be good.
So one of the things that Newegg does is shell shocker. How did you pick that? Is that the same thing that you show on your web page, or did you have to think a little bit differently?
Yes, the same thing on the website, because all the clients, we share the same service, right? That means what you see in the mobile client versus on the website, another, say, mobile client, they see the same thing.
Got it.
Yeah.
So one of the things that's really important is, I think shell shocker is a term that you guys use. It's a brand that belongs to Newegg. One of the things that's really important as we get more and more of these shopping apps is to make sure your brand shines through in the live tiles. One of the things that you would discredit yourself most is if you just show a product with no branding, because then it just kind of blends in. But you also need to make sure that you're not overdoing your branding and instead of focusing on the product that they can buy and showing just your brand. So there's a delicate balance there. I think Newegg is one of the better ones to sort of look at what they've done. But it's definitely one of those things that you need to find a balance. And if you're already thinking about what your live tiles should look like or if you have ideas, I'll do one pitch for, we have a team of app fast tracking experts. Yes. So I looked at that direction. You guys know who that is at this point. But we have a team of app fast-tracking experts. These are experts on design. These are experts on how live a lot of things on Windows. And they actually have a session out in which room is that?
Across the hall in Rainier and St. Helens.
So for those folks that are here, it's across the hall in Rainier and St. Helens, just really across the corridor. And you can actually go there and get some help. Get some ideas, get some feedback. And one of the things that I think a lot of people have to really think about is how to find that balance between branding and the live tile so they can help with that.
Okay. Next, let's talk about location. This makes sense for some shopping apps. You know, when you have something like Living Social where you're buying a deal that you then have to redeem at a brick and mortar sort of store, that sort of thing makes sense. A lot of companies have both a brick and mortar presence as well as an online presence. So it might make sense to know, you know, if you're searching for a product, you can find out if it's available in a store near you or something like that.
Does Newegg make any use of location?
No, since we don't have the physical store.
Got it.
Right. We might add one feature since we do have one that we call center in Seattle industry. That means they, when some user, they check out, they live in their zone, we may just say, tell them, okay, you are close to the wheel call. Yeah, it could be one feature on the list.
And another thing to think about is as you calculate tax and shipping, a lot of companies sort of wait until the last moment that you've entered all that information to show you the final cost. But it could help especially if you're one of the marketplace kind of apps. Where you can have many different price points depending on where you live, and shipping kind of costs different, you can actually use the location to estimate a final cost to help those people making decisions. And in the US, where the tax laws are so complicated, I'm not even going to get there, those numbers can change based on where you are. So something to think about, something to take advantage of if it's already there.
Yeah, good points. Okay, branding, we got into this a little bit. So you really want to be able to, like on your live tile, even within your app and your store listing, make sure that your brand shines through that. I think Newegg did a really great job of this using, your colors.
Yeah.
And the fonts that you guys use, and that went throughout your app and the slogan that's right on your canvas page there. Can you talk a little bit about the branding decisions that you guys made?
Yes, because we create another, say, high-reach user experience for the customer, right? We want to make sure the customer say they can realize it's Newegg, it's our experience, it's our application. That's why we have because we have a lot of geeks. That's why we put a slogan there.
Yeah, and it's a trusted brand that they know from the web.
Right.
And if you can pull that over into your app as well, you're already two steps ahead of the game, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting to think about in branding is really the colors. Like it's the subtle things that matter. Colors, fonts, those things that you do on other platforms carry it over. Just because that sort of builds on top of your brand. And Live Tiles to me, it's really personal because you see that a lot and having your brand there. And also think about all the little things. So what are those little things? Number one, make sure that when you publish to the store, that you're not missing the store icon. There's a lot of apps in the store that already misses the store icon. That same icon is also used in the search charm. So make sure that you use something that people recognize. Don't use a black box or anything. Just use that. Use all the branding space that you have on the store. And if you don't have live tiles, number one, go think about what you can have. But that base logo that goes onto your square tile because you don't have a live tile is, again, really, really important for people to interact with it.
Okay. Last thing on there was receipts. So really what that translates to is printing. And, in most apps or most purchases, when people make a purchase online, they're not going to get their merchandise right away. And so they'd like to be able to print something to prove I paid for this, right? At least I do. I want something to give me some sort of solace that I bought something. It's a piece of paper right now, but I'll be getting it. So that's... It's gotten much easier to print now in Windows 8, right? Just the layout. Santosh went over this earlier in his talk. If you didn't see that, I recommend go back and watch the recording online. Anything you guys want to add to any sort of printing that you're doing in the Newegg app?
We may just say check all the user feedback, see whether our customer, they are pretty interested in, say, printing the receipts. For our Reynold approach, say, when you own the application, when you log in, you can see all your, say, place the order. Also, you can share those order status. That means email the order to your personal account or something to keep it go green or something.
Yeah.
We don't have the printing the function.
Got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Great.
That's it's a good, say, kind of the approach, say, for some user, for some customer, they really care. Say, they won't get a paper proof.
Right. Okay. Next slide, we got into some more of the key technologies that Santosh talked about here. User authentication is a big deal for any shopping app, right? Being able to make sure that you're talking to the right person. So how do you guys do that? What's your mechanism? Do you implement it yourself? Do you use some third-party solution?
Yeah, we use our own, the authentication. Basically, say, for all the mobile client, when the user just put in their credential, we transport those raw credentials securely to the server side, and then we return some token. For the cache, the token, say, we run another, like the user context-based encryption cached on the server, on the client side. Just make sure, say, when the client gets, say, hacked or something, they cannot, say, spoof the user.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's right. For the user authentication.
Okay.
This is another plug that we should add on here. There's a couple of things to think about. In addition to rolling out your own, which a lot of the more established partners, app builders, know how to. If you're thinking about OAuth and open IDs, do check out the talk on Web Authentication Broker. Did I get it right?
That's right.
Wow, I'm glad. So Web Authentication Broker, we covered it in the Shopping Key Technologies talk earlier in the hour, and I think there's a deeper session on that. What it is basically a simplified system-level way of logging into an OAuth, OAuth ID, and you know, these include Facebook and the you know, the usual suspects, including Microsoft account as well. So I would strongly recommend everyone to take a look at that instead of building your own way of doing it. See what's available. And today we had a demo on PayPal, how they take advantage of that to log in and actually use use PayPal to accept payments in your app. So do check that out.
Yeah, and of course, if you already have a back end that does all that for you, it's easy enough to wrap it up and send the encrypted data to that, right, and do it yourself. User workflow. So this is, you know, basically talking about how you move from the hub landing page within your app into maybe a category, from a category to a detail page, and then finally to the purchase. You know, this is different depending, I think, on what it is you're selling. Search has to figure in there as well, search and filtering. At a high level, I don't know, how did you guys think about this? What did you decide was the right workflow for your customers?
Right. Say, typically we have some like the user experience research. Say, just pick up. Say, try to identify what's the typical the navigation paths. Say, for some user, they just prefer the category drill down. Some user they prefer the search. Mm-hmm. We will make sure for each of those typical the scenario, the application make sure say it's fluent, it's intuitive for the user to pick it up. Right. That's our the kind of the.
Yeah. And the couple of things that I think the entire room might know, but just reiterate for the less steps tend to be better.
Right, right.
One of the things that I love about Windows is how it helps you reduce the Chrome and keep your attention on the thing that you're trying to sell and the customer is trying to buy. So take advantage of the app bar, take advantage of charms, remove all that clutter away, and you know, put it in charms or in the app bar where it belongs. And the next thing is reducing the number of places that people can get out of the flow, like putting a web view or an iframe, reducing as many of those and keeping the experience as smooth as possible. Living Social chose to make a two-click buy. That name could be a trouble now that I realize. But there, you only require two steps to buy. And Newegg, if you're buying a shell shocker, it really takes two or three steps as well. So think about those things that you think your customers would want to buy pretty quickly and think how you can flatten that design instead of having seven or eight steps, which is sort of the norm today if you go to a website.
Yep. Looks like we have about 2 minutes left, so I'm going to let you pick of these last three things.
Or do we want to open up for one last question?
Yeah.
An easy one.
No question.
I'm going to let you get your surfaces in the next 2 minutes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Right.
You basically have your own credentials you store on your local machine, and you know how to connect the wish list to that specific user. Maybe you would like to see the same wish list on another machine. How do you do roaming in such a situation?
Right. To repeat the question, it's how do you roam the wish list?
Yes, yes. Say basically, when the user log on, we have one the server-side profile. Say when you add one item to the wish list, we will send the change, say, asynchronous to our server side. That means when you log into another machine or another mobile client, you will see the same results.
So is it true to say that you can use your cloud backend if you have
right.
your own cloud backend? If you don't, you can think about roaming a standard set of or a small set of things in the...
Using the API, the setting API, right?
Thank you.
Right.
The setting APIs, which I believe is a limited amount of...
Yeah, it's a small amount of data. It's like under 100K, so there's not a lot you can put in there.
Or you can use someone's SkyDrive if you want to use that, and then you have to think about how do I encrypt this? Is it something super secure or needs to be super secure or not? And then you have to look at different options. But if you have super secret data, cloud seems to be the best, your own cloud. If you have data, that's more about settings and small roaming, like wish lists, which is a bunch of URLs, or identifiers, think about the settings API. And if you're thinking of roaming big sets of data, think about connecting to SkyDrive, which is a great set. And for those of us here, we have, what, 100 gigs now? So that's good news. Seriously, the SkyDrive is a really good way of storing large data. There was one more in the back. That will be the last one before.
You talked about user workflow. If we have a shopping cart online, there's a lot of tools, like for websites, which you use to track people, analytics, metrics, to make decisions about how to improve that. How did you go about doing that?
So really good question. The question is, and I'll let you answer, and then I'll give a heads up on that. The question was, in online, we use a lot of tools to track shopping cart stuff, metrics, analytics. How do you go about doing that in Windows? So how are you guys tracking it?
Yeah, I guess,
you're good.
Sorry, it's 6:45. So for all our the mobile application, we use the same thing. Say basically for all the analytics, they have the SDK for the native application. You just tag those behavior, right? It will say push those data to a centralized the repository. You can run the drill down or the reporting those stuff.
So if you have really rich ways of doing it already, you can tie it to that system,
right,
which is what you've chosen. I would also say if you, there's a set of these really great tools. You know, Google Analytics is one,
right.
Flurry is one, and Adobe is one too. Flurry actually is right across the hallway. If you want to just stop by and see what they have to offer, they have a great set of resources. I would totally recommend talking to them. And the plea for everyone, or the ask for everyone, is go talk to your provider, whoever it is, to make their SDK available for Windows. And because I think that's a core component of shopping apps.
Just one comment, say, if the SDK is not there, so basically for all the SDK, they just essentially just have one HTTP post, right? They have all the raw tags. You can just rather say 10 lines of code, just push those tags to their server. Mm-hmm. So it's not a big deal for the SDK.
There you go. Hacker's answer to everything. I think we're going to wrap up, so these fine people can go and get some rest, get some surfaces. And thank you, everyone. Thank you, Montauk.
Thank you very much for coming up and sharing your answers. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mark, for hosting. And we're going to be around. We have this was the end of our shopping track of our three-part series. So hope you enjoyed it. If you need to get a hold of us, you know our names. We're going to be around. So thank you very much.
We're around here, too. Stop us and talk.
Thanks, guys.
See you.